Now I grew up down an old dirt road in a town you wouldn't know. I still live in the sticks where you wouldn't go, in a town of 1200 off an old dirt road, and a country boy is all I'll ever be.
$32. That is the price of a plain old box of plain old CCI Blazer brass, 9mm ammo in North Pole, Alaska, which is 85 miles to the north of me, that direction. You guys on YouTube can see me point that way, behind me, north. If I want to go into Fairbanks, which is about another 15 miles, which we normally do, if we go to Fairbanks, that's where we do our grocery shopping and that kind of stuff, and I'm just making a point. Anyway, if I go to Fairbanks, I can go to Sportsman's Warehouse, and I can pay $28 a box for 9mm, you know, various whatever. A few of the smaller backwater shops might have it around, you know, $24, $25 a box, but that is as cheap as you can get 9mm ammo up here. There is one place that does reloads at about $75 to $80 for 200 rounds, but the ammo is not the best quality. With the high price of ammo, you can imagine that reloading components have also been quite pricey. A pound of powder right now is around $52, something like that, the couple times I've seen it, if you can even find it. And primers are, like, last time I saw primers, they were Wolf large rifles, and they were $100. CCIs are about $120, Federals, probably $150 if you could find them. But I haven't actually been able to get primers in about 2 years. I saw the Wolf ones up there a while back. At the time, I still had some large rifle primers. I was like, all this weight. Now I'm out of primers. I haven't been able to get more. So let's do some math here real quick. Let's add this up. So let's say we get primers for $100 a brick, or 10 cents a piece. And powder is $50 a pound, and we need 4 grains for a 9mm round. That comes to a price of about somewhere just shy. We're going to call it 3 cents a round. Now, add a bullet at the cost of around 10 cents each, and we come up to about 23 cents a round, assuming we're using range brass and not having to buy brass. You know, if I've had to buy brass in the past when I used to shoot competitively. Sometimes you don't get to pick up brass and that kind of stuff. Right now I've got plenty of range 9mm brass if I wanted to load some. So, assuming we're not using brass, we're just buying bullets, powder, primer, and we're using range brass, that total cost for 1,000 rounds would be about $230, give or take. I looked up the price of 9mm bullets. I was looking at the Gallant 147 grain powder coated or Teflon coated, whatever they coat them. I forget what they call their coating. But they're coated lead bullet, polymer coated lead bullet. And those are what I used to shoot when I used to shoot competitively. Good bullets. I like a 147 and a 9mm. And they were like 9 cents. You know, if you want to go with an Acura jacketed 124 grain, they're about 10, 11 cents. And then, of course, you go into, you know, Hornady or any jacketed bullet, you're going to pay more. But we're going to say 9 or 10 cents for a bullet. Total cost, 1,000 rounds, $230. Now, I can go to Target Sports USA online and get 1,000 rounds shipped for about $270 for good ammo, you know, name brand stuff. And not have to deal with cleaning brass and loading or even, you know, having to pick up brass after shooting, which I'm starting to despise as I get older and fatter. It's funny because when I was a kid, we never bought factory ammo, ever. I always reloaded. And I remember when I first started shooting competitively, I would be, like, livid if I didn't get all my brass back. I was shooting 45. I made sure I counted. I get every piece of my brass back. You know, it was funny. Normally, I came back with more brass than I shot. You know, if I shot 100 rounds, I'd come back with 120 pieces of brass. But I was real particular about getting all my brass back, and, you know, a few years getting into shooting semi-autos. You know, when I was a kid, we always shot lever actions and bolt actions and revolvers and stuff, and I didn't have to worry about picking up brass. I got into semi-autos, I had to pick the brass up, and it was, you know, I was picky about it. Now, there's probably, I've been shooting this Glock 19 the last couple of weeks, there's probably 500 pieces of brass laying in the driveway, and I might pick them up later, or I might just let them become part of the driveway. But, to buy 1,000 rounds locally of 9mm, buy 1,000 rounds locally would run me somewhere north of $400, depending on what kind of deals I could find. The problem is I cannot have ammo shipped to Alaska. Or can I? So I recently found out that one of the local trucking companies offers a freight forwarding service, and when I asked about ammo, they said it's no problem. As long as it's properly labeled. It has to be labeled as hazmat, but they said generally when people ship ammo around the lower 48, they mark it accordingly. So according to calculations I went over when I was talking to the gentleman up there, it cost me about $30 a case to have ammo shipped up here. Now, you can see how this would be a real game changer in my neck of the woods. I'm hoping to put this to the test here real soon. I've got about 500 rounds of 9mm left. I've been shooting with Glock a lot lately, trying to get a feel for it. And I haven't been buying 9mm ammo because I didn't have a 9mm. Now I've got one. I'm shooting up my stash. I need to get some more. And I was in Fairbanks looking the other day, and holy crap, I'm not paying that. $28 a box for 9mm, $32 a box for 9mm. So yeah, I'm hoping to put this forwarding thing to the test soon and get a couple cases of, probably going to get some 9mm, might order a case of 45, case of 10mm. Once I go back to work, it's going to be a couple weeks. I don't have the cash right now. And I'm hoping that with this, I can also, if you can get it online, you can also have powder and primers forwarded up here as well. Okay, so one thing with this service is I will still have to pick up the boxes of ammo, powder, primers, whatever, at the shipping yard in Fairbanks, but I can plan around it so I don't have to make a special trip. You know, it's $100 in fuel to drive back and forth to Fairbanks. It's not that much. It cost me about $100 to fill the truck up with diesel. It cost me a little less than a half tank running back and forth. So it's $50-$60 to run back and forth to Fairbanks. You know, if I'm running forbidden diesel and all that good stuff, you didn't hear me say that out loud. But, yeah, I'm really hoping that this service works out as well as I'm hoping it will. It's going to be a real game changer for a high-volume shooter. And I haven't been a high-volume shooter in quite a while. I used to shoot 500, 600 rounds a week out of whatever gun I was carrying. Competitively shooting, I shot similar guns to what I carried. I used to shoot 250 rounds a week, you know, shooting competition, and then another that, if not more, practicing. And now I've maybe shot 250 rounds all winter. I can't get the stuff to reload ammo up here. And I am not paying $60 a box for 45 ACP to go blast it. You know, and yeah, I can sometimes find ammo cheaper. A couple weeks ago I was in a shop and I was able to get like two boxes of older 9mm that he got in with a trade on a gun for $15 a box. But it's not common. Another thing I'm hoping that this will do will also make it easier to get hard-to-find ammo. So, like a couple years ago, my buddy Roy, he's been on the podcast before, he convinced me to buy a Mossberg 935, which is a 12-gauge with 3.5-inch chambers. And this gun has sat in the closet pretty much ever since because 3.5-inch 12-gauge is nearly impossible to find up here. And I have other shotguns that I like a lot better if I'm just going to shoot 2 3/4-inch or 3-inch shells. I do have like 3 boxes of Winchester, their blindside, no goose load, double 3.5-inch BB that I did manage to pick up a couple years ago. And I've been saving them. I shot a couple to kind of pattern it, and I've just been saving them for hunting. So online, I can get 3.5-inch 12-gauge. If I can have it shipped up here, I can get a case. You know, yeah, if I'm going to pay the shipping, I'm going to get a case. Generally, I didn't buy ammo until I was in Idaho. So, 2017. Probably the first time I actually, started buying ammo to shoot. And I would order it from, at the time, I was signed up for the Target Sports Prime. And I would just get case. If I'm going to order ammo, I'll order a case, get the free shipping, all that kind of stuff. You know, with Target Sports USA, if you're signed up for Prime, you get 8% off of whatever their market price is. So it's a pretty good deal. Up here, if I sign up for that Target Sports Prime again and it works out, that 8% I'm saving with their free shipping to the yard in Tacoma, that 8% that I'm saving will pay the shipping to get it the rest of the way up here. That's a big deal. And if I'm ordering a couple cases a month, it's going to be worth it. So it doesn't take very much. You know, I think the Prime membership was $100 a year or something like that. It doesn't take very much to make up for that $30 a case, three cases of ammo to get the shipping basically for free, and you've made up that $90, $100 to sign up for the membership. And I've also been hoping to get back into competitive shooting. But the cost of ammo and not being able to get reloading components has been a factor that's held me back, especially since the closest place where they shoot USPSA is Fairbanks, which is a 4-hour round trip to go shoot a match. So like I said, there's $60 in diesel to go up there and back. Plus, if I was 200 round match at $30 a box, there's another 60, 90, 100, and, what, $120, 180 bucks with ammo and gas to go up there and shoot, and then probably another 20, but I'm going to get hungry, and I'm too lazy to take sandwich with me, and I'm going to have to go buy breakfast or food wherever I'm in, you know? So yeah, I mean, we're talking $200 to go shoot a match. Fun hobby, not cost-effective to get into for me up here. When I was in Idaho, I could drive over to Acura Bullets and pick up 120 or 147 grain bullets for, I think I was paying $50 a thousand, something like that. $60 a thousand, 60, maybe it was 65 a thousand. I could get primer for $35 a box at the time. Powder was $25 a pound. I had two progressive presses set up. It wasn't a big deal. And the range where I shot USPSA was 10 minutes from my house. I'd love to get back into it. I really enjoyed shooting. If I was going to get back to it, into it at this point, I don't know that I would go like super competitive with it. Like building a custom race gun and all that kind of stuff, like what I was doing down there. I think I would just like more like shoot my carry gun. Like this is a good chance to go run, not really drills, but go run a course with whatever gun I'm carrying. My 1911, this Glock, you know, whatever. And I probably even run my carry setup, you know, a couple Simply Rugged leather ammo or magazine carriers, a holster, and go for it. But yeah, I would really, really enjoy to get back into competitive shooting and start honing my pistol skills again. I have to be honest, other than like here and there, you know, if I change out my carry gun or, you know, change my pants or put a different holster on or something, do a little bit of dry fire at it, but I haven't really been doing dry fire since we left Idaho. And I was actually running some like dry fire drills the other day with this Glock 19. And I'm a little bit ashamed of how far I have fallen in that draw skill. You know, I haven't done it for a couple years. I'm fatter now, and that doesn't help anything. And the, you know, the biggest issue I was having with the draw, actually, as I was coming up out of the holster and I was doing my forward press, my thumb was catching on my suspenders. I show you guys on YouTube, I wear suspenders now to keep my pants up. I pretty much wear suspenders all the time because I've gotten a big belly and no ass to hold my pants up. And as I was coming up on that draw, I was catching my thumb, you know. When I'm out shooting outside on the range, it's not a big deal. But when I was actually trying to do a speed draw coming up out, I said I put on my old competitive shooting holster that I used to have for my Glock 34 and my Glock 22. And I was using the 19 in that holster setup. And when I was actually going for speed, yeah, I was nagging my thumb on my suspenders. And that's going to be something I'm going to have to practice and get back away from. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on. It isn't spring here yet. You guys on YouTube can probably see my breath here. It's like 21 degrees outside right now. But it's getting close. So I've been hiring myself out for skid steer work. I normally do this every spring. There's a large number of people up here who don't plow their driveways all winter. So this time of year, when the temps start to get above freezing, you got 2 foot of snow you've been driving on. It compresses some, but you know, you'll get a foot of hard pack on your driveway. And during the day, you know, a couple days ago, we were getting up 45 degrees during the day. And that snow softens and people are getting stuck in their driveways. Happens every year. So then you got to bring in equipment. You're not going to get that hard pack up with a plow truck like my Jimmy. So we bring in equipment. Loader, skid steer works pretty good for most driveways. You know, if they got small cars and that kind of stuff. If it's something that's been getting a lot of heavy traffic, like a road that hasn't been plowed. There's a few roads around here that people... Nobody wants to take the responsibility to pay for the plowing, so they just don't get plowed all winter. And then in the spring, nobody can get out, and they all freak out. And somebody will have to finally, you know, break down, hire somebody to bring a loader in or a grader and clear it. But most driveways you can do with a skid steer, and that's what I've been doing all week. Myself, I prefer to keep up on my plowing all winter. And I guess, you know, from a financial standpoint, just having to do it once a year in the spring. If I'm charging them $200 with a skid steer, that's like four plowings with a plow truck at $50 a piece. So generally, you know, I have to plow more than four times. So I guess financially, if you're worried about money and you don't own the equipment to do it, paying somebody to pull the hard pack up in the spring is cheaper, but it's just not worth it to me. I've got the equipment though, you know. I used to do it on a four-wheeler, but now I got this Jimmy, fire up the Jimmy, 15 minutes, I'm done plowing, I can go back and sit next to the fire and enjoy a cup of coffee. But yeah, either way, it's been keeping me busy the past few days, you know, a few days a week, and running out of skid steer, and I'm just doing the work, and you know, it'd be nice to have my own skid steer, but I don't have 80 grand laying around to go out and buy a new one, and even if I had the cash, I don't have the cash right now, but even if I had the cash to buy a used one, I'd be a little hesitant, or a lot hesitant, because I know how skid steers get treated on job sites. They always put the newest guy in them that doesn't have any experience, and they get the crap beaten out of them. They use the little skid steers for everything. Oh, we need to move this light, or dig up and replace this light base. Go get the skid steer. I've seen them get the arms bent, all kinds of stuff. Real hesitant to buy a used one, just because of how they get used on job site and because of the inexperienced operators running them. Yeah, other than that, I've been trying to do a little bit of cleanup, some spring cleaning around here. You know, there's still a foot of snow, foot and a half of snow. There's more than that, foot and a half at least. Still a long ways from getting melted off, but I've got a bunch of junk. You know, whenever I go to Fairbanks, I always end up picking up something or another and collecting it. About this time every year, I get sick of all the junk sitting in the yard, and I'll go through it. I'll have a big online yard sale on Facebook Marketplace or something, and sell off all the junk I've collected over the winter. You know, I'm a collector. I bought three sets of tires for my plow truck because they were good deals on Facebook Marketplace. Oh, I'm going to need those, and now spring's here, and I didn't pop any tires, and I've got 12 extra tires sitting in the yard for the plow truck that I'll need, so I'll go ahead and resell them and get rid of some of the junk around here, you know. Some of them I actually get for free. Most of the time with tires, I get them for free. And then I'll sell them, make a few bucks on them. But, yeah, there's a lot of junk, trying to get things cleaned up around here. Trying to get my shed cleaned out a little bit. I decided the other day I've got a 8x12 shed that's been kind of a tool shack. But I'm going to go ahead and get some of my junk moved out of there. Last fall I bought one of them big Shelter Logic 24-foot, I think it's 24x13 tent sheds. And I'm going to set it up and insulate the wall, set it up permanently on a, I might even pour concrete footings and put it on there. So I'm going to move a bunch of my stuff out of the shed and into that. And then the shed is going to get airproofed, you know, silicone in everything where we get any silt and that kind of stuff around the edges. And I'm actually going to, I think I'm going to set my reloading equipment up in there for the summer. If I can start getting powder and primers again. I had to take it down, it's out of the house, so I don't really have it set up right now where I can use it. Actually, two of my presses are still set up on a bench behind where the living room couch is, and wife wants me to finish taking it down, and I haven't gotten to it yet. It does need to come out of there. You know, it's not really a great spot for it. You know, the house is small enough as it is. So I'm hoping to maybe get my reloading, and then once I get that shed set up with reloading equipment and kind of turn it into a gun room, I'll probably start recording the podcast out there also. Another thing I was hoping to do this week while I had a skid steer rented, and I was hoping to get the snow cleared off of my shooting range, but so far, every time I've rented one, I've been fully booked out for the day with no extra time to get anything done for myself. But, you know, that's just the name of the game sometimes. I'm sure you're getting tired of hearing about the Tatiana cigars. And you guys watching on YouTube, notice how I keep doing that. I'll lean in on the table like this. I'm really trying to avoid doing that because, for one, every time my arms hit the table, it makes noise on the mic. And then for two, I'll notice when I'm editing, you can tell that there's voice audio level differences when I lean in close to the mic like that. So I'm trying to just stay back and kind of hard. But anyway, I'm sure you guys are tired of hearing about these Tatiana cigars. But I'm going to run out eventually. I only bought the one sampler pack. A while back, a couple weeks ago, I took one of each of the cigars in my humidor from each box or whatever, and I set them into a separate little pile in a little compartment to select and smoke on the show, so that way I'm not smoking duplicates. I select shows, cigars to smoke on the show from that pile, and I'm sure it'll happen someday where I'll smoke a duplicate again, but right now I'm trying to keep it a different weekly cigar, so anytime I get anything new that I haven't talked about before, it goes in there. and I'm selecting from that little pile. At this point, I knew that if I let Amanda pick again, I was going to get a Tatiana. So I decided I was just going to close my eyes, walk up to the humidor, reach into the compartment, shuffle around, and smoke whatever the first cigar I pulled out was. It was another Tatiana. But I told myself that I was going to smoke the first one I grabbed, and a man is nothing if he's not true to his word, and lying to yourself is just as bad as lying to everybody else. So I'm going to smoke this cigar, and maybe I'll grab something different next week. We'll see how I decide to choose the cigar. So this cigar this week, for you guys on YouTube, is the Tatiana Fusion Frenzy. And if you notice, you guys on YouTube will be able to see that. I'm getting just a little bit of canoeing on this cigar. Not bad. Not great, but not bad. You know, they are a cheaper cigar. Actually, I take that back. They're not really that cheap. I got these ones fairly cheap. But, so according to the website on this, it's a flavor of exotic fruits and Madagascar vanilla and bourbon. And it's got an Indonesian wrapper with a Dominican Cuban seed filler. So the cap on this cigar has a strange sweetness to it that I can't quite place it. Kind of like an exotic berry, I would guess. Not really sure. The cold draw on it, when I went to go light it up, the cold draw also offers that kind of same exotic sweetness, but it's not nearly as much as that first taste off of the cap. And then generally, when I do this, I will smoke the first third of the cigar or so, and then I'll kind of write out my thoughts about it here on my script. And I didn't finish writing out the rest of the script past that. I lit the cigar up and I got into recording. So you guys are getting, as I'm smoking the cigar, exactly what I think of it right now. You guys on YouTube, this is it. I'm smoking the cigar. I'm giving you my remarks. I'll edit the pauses out on the podcast, but this is what you guys are getting. On the retrohale, I'm getting a hint of that bourbon. It's not real prevalent. You can kind of notice it. It's not a major flavor factor, I guess. Like, it's there, but it's not super prevalent. It's like just a hint of bourbon. Now that I've been smoking a cigar for a minute, I'm not really getting any more of that berry flavor, that weird exotic fruity flavor. It's not really a berry. It's kind of fruity. I don't know what it is, but I'm not really getting it too much in the smoke. It's just kind of smoking like a cigar. I don't really know what to think about this one. It's a not a bad cigar. Not my favorite. The cap's a little too sweet for me now. A couple years ago when I first started smoking cigars, I probably would have loved this cigar. But it's a little overly sweet on the cap. And it leaves a little bit to for an infused cigar. It leaves a little bit to be desired on that infusion. I'm just not really sure what it's supposed to be. I should really come up with a rating on cigars, like a 1 to 10. I'm going to put this one at about a 4. I would smoke it again. I wouldn't buy it again on purpose. Like, if it came in a sampler pack or whatever, I wouldn't, buy a box of these. Like, that Tatiana Groovy Blue, the first one I smoked here on the show, that's a great cigar. I would buy a box. In fact, I did buy a box of those, and I have a couple of friends who are, newer cigar smokers, and I'll give those to those guys. And I'll smoke that cigar. That's a good cigar. I like that cigar. This one, I don't, hate it, but it leaves something to be desired for an infused cigar. I'm not sure what it's supposed to be. Definitely not my favorite. I like the cinnamon one from last week better than I like this one. And that says something, but I don't like cinnamon. And then, of course, I'm smoking it just a little bit too fast here. Trying to get this canoeing to go away. You know, I'm scraping the edge of the ash on my ashtray over here. And just trying to get that canoeing to stop and go away. So it's getting a little hot. So I'm getting a little bit of that burned cigar flavor because I'm trying to smoke it a little too fast to keep it from going out. You guys, you guys can see it's only lit on half. It might have been a bad light. It was smoking pretty good for the first inch. I'm gonna give this one a 4 out of 10. Not the best. I'd smoke it again, but I wouldn't buy it again. Not on purpose. All right, guys, let's go ahead and talk about this Scout Rifle project from a few episodes back. I'm still trying to decide how I want to go about this one. And the issue I'm coming up with right now is the weight. And I mentioned this before in the other podcast. According to Jeff Cooper, the ideal weight of the Scout Rifle is 3 kilos. Which translates to 6.6 pounds for those of us who only speak American. And I'm all for light, handy rifles. I mean, I live in Alaska. I can absolutely get down with a rifle that weighs less than a gallon of water. But that 6.6 pound weight is a hard number to meet. And I've come to the conclusion I'm going to have to go semi-custom with this build. At least semi-custom, if not fully custom, with this build most likely. Now, there are some obvious ways to reduce the weight on a rifle, such as a synthetic stock. Or, you know, if you have, you can reprofile the barrel, pencil, you know, those little thin pencil barrels and whatnot. But remember, that 6.6 pounds includes an optic, a sling, and a magazine. And I looked up the name for a hand, I've looked up the specs for a handful of name brand scout rifles. And, or I'm sorry, scopes. I looked up the name, I did three scout scopes. And the lightest is the Leupold VX Freedom 1-5-4, which comes in at 9.6 ounces. However, I feel that for a general purpose rifle in 308, you need at least a 6 power, at least. And I have several low power compact optics around here, and I feel like anything less than 6 power is a limitation. Even on my 22, I like at least a 6 power. So that leaves us up to the Vortex Crossfire Scout Scope or the Burris Scout Scope, which are, the Burris is 12 ounces and the Vortex is 13 ounces according to their websites. And I'm a big fan of Vortex Optics. I have a bunch of them, and I will probably end up going with their Scout Scope, which is the lighter of the two, even though the Crossfire line is kind of their bottom of the line for the Vortex Scope. I have a Vortex Crossfire 3-9 by 42, whatever it is. It's on my Tika 17 HMR right now. Good scope. Not a high-end scope. You know, I think they were $200 brand new. For the 13-ounce scope, we're going to need a rifle that starts in the area of 5.8 pounds. And that does not include rings and a base if you need one. Remember, we're going to do a scout scope. So even rifles with a built-in base like the Tika, we're going to have to put an additional base on that to get the scope mounted forward if we go with a scout scope. With a 13-ounce scope or a 12-ounce scope, we're going to need a rifle that starts in the area of 5.8 pounds, and that does not allow any room for the bases and rings and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't include a bipod or a sling or any of the other extras I would like to see on a rifle. And there isn't a factory rifle on the market that makes that weight that I could find, unless you go with like a carbon fiber barrel. The exception to that is the Christensen Arms Mesa FFT, from what I've been able to find. I haven't found anything else that makes that 5.8 pounds stock. According to Steyr, according to their website, their scout rifle is 6.6 pounds dry. The Ruger GSR rifle with a synthetic stock weighs 6.2 pounds, but the standard laminate stock, the laminate model that is more standard on those, weighs in at 7.3 pounds. And keep in mind that for me, I still need to find this rifle in left-handed. And while the Ruger Gunsight rifle does come in left-handed, they only offer it with a laminate stock, and no one makes a left-handed synthetic stock for the Ruger 77 Actions. Trust me, I've looked before in the past. They don't exist. The Mossberg MVP Scout comes in at 7 pounds even. And the Savage Rifle, their Scout Rifle, comes in at 7.7 pounds. The Ruger American Ranch, which fits the Scout profile, comes in at 5.9 pounds. So now we're getting close to the weight. But it is not available in 308 for whatever reason, according to their website. They make it in 223, they make it in 300 Blackout, 7.62x39, 450 Bushmaster, and there might have been like one or two other calibers, but not 308 for whatever reason. Their compact American rifle comes in 308 with a factory 18-inch barrel and a shorter stock. You know, one of the things with the Scout rifle is a little shorter length of pull, and it weighs 6 pound evens, according to their website. Now, keep in mind that none of the rifles I just mentioned, except for the Ruger GSR with the laminate stock, are left-handed. None of those are available left-handed. This rifle is the The Ruger GSR is also the only one out of the group of rifles I mentioned that has the desired controlled round feed claw-style Mauser extractor. And in lighter rifles, in right-handed rifles, you can get lighter stocks. You know, there's available synthetic, probably even carbon fiber stocks available for the right-handed Ruger. But with left-handed, I'm stuck with a laminate stock. My choices for stock on the Ruger is the factory laminate or a Boyd's laminate. And that's it. So it's out. I'm trying to make this build to make weight. I can't have a rifle that starts at 7 pounds, add a scope, a sling, and all the goodies to it, and have it make 6.6 pounds. It's impossible. So the standard Ruger American model, just their standard black, blue, black stock, plain Jane, it's available in left-handed 308 with a stock weight of 6.1 pounds. The rifle comes with a 22-inch barrel and a 42-inch overall length. So losing 3 inches off the barrel to make this rifle the specified 1 meter or 39-inch overall length, and it'll give you the 19-inch barrel that he specified as well, it'll get us really close to that sub-6-pound starting weight, but we're stuck using the Ruger 4-round rotary mags unless we change the bottom metal, and that not only adds weight, but also cost. And I'm not even 100% sure that the AISC style mags, the pattern mags, will work on the left-handed actions, because Ruger, at some point, the early Americans all used the rotary mags, and at some point they kind of came out with like a second version, and the right-handed rifles, they changed the stock a little bit so that they can be converted to take the AISC magazines, and I think they changed the bolt on the right-hand rifles as well. I know they did on the rifles that use AR magazines that they started offering factory. I had a Ruger American 300 Blackout, and it didn't, I looked into converting it, and it was going to be too much because you had to modify the bolt, and I didn't have the equipment to do that. I don't think they changed the bolt on the left-handed version. They don't offer any left-handed rifle with the option of different magazines other than the rotary mag. I don't think they changed the bolt on the left-handed rifles. I don't know if you can actually use pattern or the AISC magazines on the left-handed rifles without having the bolt modified. And I may end up going this route with the Ruger American. They're cost-effective, and I like the rifle. They make a nice. It is a nice rifle. As far as iron sights for that setup with the Ruger, Skinner Sights offers a scout rail that has a built-in peep sight and an AR-style post front sight built into the rail. And now I know that makes for a short sight radius, but I seem to remember reading that Cooper wanted the front sight built into the rail anyway, and not mounted out at the end of the barrel, to keep from having the front sight snag on stuff when you're in the bush or whatever, you know, whatever, you're out in the brush, you don't want that front sight snagging on stuff. So I think it was a specification, or at least a recommendation, to have this sight mounted back in the rail. Another option that is available in left hand is the Tika T3X Light. And they also have a super light with a fluted barrel, but since we're going to have to cut the barrel back to make the length requirement, I want to avoid a fluted barrel, but if I have to cut back into those flutes, it's going to look weird. And as much as the rifle needs to be practical, I also want the rifle to look good. If I'm going to put my name on a build, I want it to look nice. So I'm going to try to avoid the fluted barrels. The standard Tika T3X Light comes, their website says 6.4 pounds, which is on the heavy side for a Bear Scout rifle. And yeah, you will lose a little bit of that weight when you chop the barrel back, but not enough. And I have several Tika rifles, and I love them. They're really good rifles. Heck, I named my dog Tika. And I planned to use a Tika rifle for this project, but it's not going to make weight. Keep in mind that all these weights I am giving are from the website. And I think the Tika weight is off. I don't want to pull the scope off of one of my rifles and check the weight of the Bear rifle. And I might at some point, but I don't want to do it right now. But I think the weight on the Tika website is off. There is a fella building scout rifles on the Tika and selling them, and he claims 6.7 pounds fully kitted with a scope. My Tika T3X Superlight 6.5 Creedmoor with a 24-inch barrel comes in at 8 pounds, 4 ounces, fit with a Vortex Diamondback Tactical 4-16, a sling, loaded mag, and a bipod. So I think the weight on the Tiki rifle is a little off on their website. I'm going to have to verify that. Now, one rifle that I did find that comes really close and actually comes in under that stock weight I'm looking for, 5.8 pounds, is the Christensen Arms Mesa FFT, which comes in at an advertised 5.5 pounds. And they also have the FFT Titanium, which comes in at 5.3 pounds, but it's about $1,000 more than the standard one, which is already around $1,600. The Mesa FFT comes with a 20-inch barrel and an overall length of 40 3/4 inches, so I would need to cut it down just a little bit to make that 39 inches. And this rifle has a very thin profile steel barrel. Christensen Arms is known for their carbon fiber barrels, and they have several other rifles that make the weight requirement with carbon fiber barrels, but they're going to be, other than their Scout rifle, they have a Scout rifle that I think was 5.9 pounds kitted, or not kitted, but 5.9 pounds advertised weight with a, I think it was 16-inch carbon fiber barrel. None of their other rifles are going to make length. And you can't, you're not chopping down a carbon fiber barrel. So it kind of puts them out of the question. Now, speaking of length, some of you shorter guys can cut the stock back on a rifle, say, you know, down to like 12.5 inches, like a youth size, and make up for the longer barrel of 20 inches and get down to that 39 inches that you need to make for the overall length. Jeff Cooper actually talks about this in his book, The Art of the Rifle, and this is a quote from the rifle. He said, "The buttstock of the rifle is rather better too short than too long. A stock that is too short may tend to bump the shooter in the nose upon firing and may bang him in the eye if his scope is mounted too aft, but a stock that is too long, on the other hand, will render the weapon unwieldy and slow to use." And then he goes on to talk about why the old army rifles like the O3 Springfield had short stocks so they fit more shooters and that kind of stuff. And I can confirm that most of these old Woodstock bolt-action army rifles have really short stocks. If you've never shot like a Lee Enfield 303 British, those things have really short stocks on them for me. However, I'm 6'10", and I'm not going to cut the stock back for myself. If I was building a rifle for my wife, it would get a shorter length of pull, probably 12 inches. But not this build for myself. I'm gonna have to chop the barrel to make length, or just be slightly over length, which doesn't bother me, as long as it's within an inch or two. I'm a big guy; I can handle an extra inch or two of rifle. But it's not gonna be a true Scout unless I get it under that 39 inches. I'm still kind of leaning towards doing my build on the Tika Action, if I'm perfectly honest. It's kind of a middle-of-the-road price rise, you know, $800 or so. And if I don't start with a fluted rifle, I could always have the barrel and bolt fluted to reduce some weight, you know, a little bit. And maybe trim a little bit of weight out of other places, and I'll take the butt pad off and maybe grind out the inside of the stock a little bit, you know. There might be some other places I can lose some weight. There's a company that makes carbon fiber stocks for the Tikas that are like 15 ounces. Or, I'm sorry, no, they're more than that. They're a pound and a half. So what, that's 16, 22 ounces, something like that? What's 24 ounces? I don't know. I don't do math. Anyway, there's carbon fiber stocks out there for the Tika, and I could buy a Tika and that $600 stock and still be cheaper than that Christensen, which the Christensens are nice rifles. My buddy Roy has a 300 Win Mag from them. Really nice rifle. Expensive. So with the Tika, I'm thinking I'll cut the barrel back, make, you know, trim it up. I'm shooting for this closest 6.6 pounds as I can get for the rifle and scope. But remember, he also had a maximum weight of 7.7 fully kitted with a sling and a bipod. So really, if I can get anywhere between that 6.6 and 7.7 pounds, I'll be okay with it. I want it to be closer to the 6.6. That's my goal here, is to get as light as possible. And if I'm honest, I'm still leaning towards building it with a LPVO as well, and just having a practical rifle and not a true Scout. But part of the reason for this project was to give the Scout in its true form a test and find its strengths and weaknesses and go from there. But I may just run a low power variable optic and be done with it. There are pros and cons to both scope setups. I've never really spent a lot of time with a scout, but I have shot them. I have handled them. I have used them, and they both have pros and cons. I was talking to Steve Clifford, who is a bigger name in the scout industry, or the scout, not the industry, I guess the hobbyist group, the scout group. He's a fairly big name. He's got a really good YouTube channel. A lot of really good information on the scout rifles on his YouTube channel and his blog. And I was talking to him about the scope setups, and he likes a intermediate eye relief, like a couple of the scopes that Leupold used to make, but there's not much on the market these days in that intermediate eye relief. But with the LPVOs have seen a lot of advancement in the last few years, especially, with the pickup of people shooting three gun and long range competition. You're shooting three gun and there might be a target out 600 yards. Those LPVOs have really seen a lot of advancement in the last few years, and I suspect that they're going to become even more popular after this body cam footage this past week from that Nashville Catholic school shooting, showing the officer running a Vortex low power variable on his rifle when he took out that shooter. Now, one other feature that Cooper talks about in the art of the rifle, not necessarily in the book, but just with the scout rifle concept in general, is having a built-in bipod. And the Steyr is, I think, the only one you're going to get that on. And that is not a huge deal to me, as most of my bolt guns wear stock-mounted bipods. But I'm not going to include the bipod in the goal weight of 6.6 pounds. There's some decent lightweight bipods out there that are in the 8-ounce weight, half a pound range. So if I get that rifle close to that weight, I can add a bipod and still be close to that 7.7 max weight. So the bipod is not going to be included in my weight. However, I probably will run one on the rifle once it's built. Now, with all that being said, it is becoming more obvious that for a left-handed shooter like myself, I'm going to have to go semi-custom to get a true scout rifle. And I haven't looked into that. There's options. I thought about a Browning BLR. But, or something like that. Or there's some auto rifles, some semi-auto rifles. I'm going to stick with a bolt action. And for me to get a bolt action that meets all the requirements in a left-handed rifle, I'm going to have to go semi-custom. Now, I might be able to just buy a rifle, cut the barrel back a little bit, and do all that work myself, and avoid sending it off to a gunsmith for modification. But I have yet to find a factory rifle that makes the weight and length requirements. So I'm going to have to either build from scratch or buy a rifle and modify it. With that Christensen Mesa FFT, I think the scope base is going to be an issue without having something custom made. There are scout bases out there for the Remington 700s, which the Christensen is based off of, but they're for the Remington profile barrels. And if you look at the Christensen, you can see there's a steep drop where that rifle goes to that little thin pencil barrel to make that weight. And I don't think you're going to find a base that fits that without having to have something custom made. So, really, my biggest concern with this project is the weight. I'm a big guy. I don't mind if the rifle was an inch or two over 39 inches. I'm not 100% sold on the forward-mounted optic being the best. I still think they're, when Cooper was playing with this concept 30 years ago, there was a lot of advantages. But the scout scopes haven't developed at the same rate other scopes have. I don't know that forward-mounted scope is the way to go. I think it's a little bit dated now, and that the concept has lacked development. Like the LPVOs, look how far the LPVOs have come in the last 10 years, 15 years, and we're still seeing scout scopes that were designed 15, 20 years ago that haven't really changed. The intermediate eye relief rifles like I was talking with Steve Clifford for, they're just not even available anymore. So, another thing for me is that, in my mind, a general-purpose rifle is useful out to about 600 yards. And I know that's not going to be the thing for a lot of people, but for me, I want to see a rifle 600 yards. I shoot out to 600 yards fairly regularly, And I don't see the scout scope being practical past about 300 yards, since it's generally going to be set up and sighted in for a maximum point blank range and left there. For the 308, that maximum point blank range is around 250 yards. With the scout scope, going anything past that is just a guess as far as holdover, as I haven't found a scout scope yet that offers any kind of BDC reticle or target turrets. You know, I'm okay with like, all my LPVOs have cap target turrets, but I can still take the dust cap off and accurately click in shots with these nice big knobs that I can get my fingers on, and I haven't seen that in a scout scope. And I do like to be able to precisionally click in shots. Yeah, most of my rifles are sighted in at 200 yards. I can, out to 250 yards, pull up and be on target on, especially on something the size of a moose. But, you know, if I have the time, even for a 200, let's say the shot's 240 yards. If I have the time, I'm going to look at my dope and I'm going to click, you know, whatever it is to get to that, no, to get a precision, to get it closer to the, anything that you can do to cut down, what's the word I'm looking for here? Cut down on your variances. Anything that cuts, you know, oh, I don't even really know how to, I'm just drawing a blank here all of a sudden. But you guys get what I'm saying. Take out any variables. You know, if my scope got bumped and I'm going to be hitting 4 inches low at 250 yards and now I'm hitting 8 inches low. Well, if I clip that shot back in that 4 inches, now I'm back, you know, closer to where I needed to be on my target. Take out any, you know, I like to be able to click in those shots. So yeah, I like, so I may not end up actually doing a scout scope on this because I don't want to spend $400 on a scope that's going to end up sitting on the shelf. And I don't know that there's a whole lot of market to go out and resell a scope if I buy one and end up not using it. You know, scout, there's only so many people that want these things. So, but yeah, so I do want to stay close to that 6.6 pound weight for the rifle and scope. And I want the rifle to be handy overall. I don't need or want a 36 power scope on this, but I wouldn't mind having an 8 or even a 10 power scope, you know, on the high end. But I probably also want no more than 2.5 power on the low end for quick up close work. I've got several 1-6 LPVOs, and I find myself in the low end running them up at around 2 power, and I'm happy with them there. I don't hardly ever take them all the way down to 1, unless I'm trying to adjust the scope real quick for a quick close shot and just crank it down. Generally, if I'm in the brush, I'll crank it to about 2 powers and leave it there. And like I said, I'm not going to include a bipod in that weight, and anything other than the scope, maybe a sling. It's a hard weight to make, and many iron-sided rifles won't even make that weight. But anyway, overall, I'm still thinking this is going to be a fun project. I kind of wanted to touch bases. I've been researching this a little bit. I wanted to put some more of my thoughts out there for it. And I liked the idea of having a medium rifle or a handy rifle like this in a medium range caliber. It'll be a good thing because most of my rifles I have right now are heavy hitters, 45-70, 375 Ruger, or they're light rifles, 223. I don't have a 308. I like the 308. It's a great cartridge. Easy to get ammo for. You know, great for taking to the range and shooting and practicing long range and that kind of stuff. I've been wanting to get another 308, and this gives me a good reason to get one and try to do this general purpose, you know, this practical rifle, if you will. I'm still not 100% sure. I was talking about going full scout with this, but the more I think about it, the more I'm kind of leaning toward doing a practical rifle build my way, just so I can, I think it'll be more useful for my needs to be able to set it up like that. All right, everyone, before we wrap this one up, you might be wondering what the heck's going on with the name, and I'm hoping that changing the name of the show won't make it harder for people to find it while, you know, for a while and cost me downloads. I've mentioned I'm going to be changing the name. This week will be the first week that this will be the Shooter's Apprentice podcast. All the social media has been that way. I've used that name for a long time. So that the podcast is now going to be the Shooter's Apprentice podcast. As far as social media, you can find me by the name of the Shooter's Apprentice pretty much everywhere, including, but not limited to, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Truth Social, and I believe I'm on MeWe as well, but I don't really use all of them consistently. Instagram is probably my personal favorite to share stuff on, because I can, you know, working on a project, I can post pictures of it real quick. And I can also be found on various online forums like the Arborist sites and that kind of stuff for my chainsaw stuff by that name of the Shooter's Apprentice as well. Various gun forums, chainsaw forums, heavy equipment forums, whatever. Look me up. Next week, I think we're going to be talking about the Glock 19 again and modifying it to be a better tool without going overboard. I've already done a little bit of work to it at this point, and I'm waiting for some more parts. I was going to leave this pistol stock, but I forgot about one little thing, and plastic sights and cold weather don't mix. And since I had to change the sights, I decided I'm going to go ahead and do some other things to it as well. So, with all that being said, I will see you guys next week. Until then, stay safe out there, and don't shoot yourself in the foot.
My hat don't hang on the same nail too long. My ears can't stand to hear the same old song. And I don't leave the highway long enough to bog down in the mud. 'Cause I've got rambling fever in my blood. I caught this rambling fever.